Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This weekend, we said goodbye to Alex Trebek. As the host of Jeopardy since 1984, he held the Guinness World Record for most game show episodes hosted by the same presenter and was a seven-time Emmy winner. Trebek was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer in March 2019 and Sunday, at age 80, passed away at his home surrounded by family and friends. His last day on the set was October 29th, and Jeopardy episodes hosted by Trebek will air through Christmas. Here's a clip of Alex Trebek introducing this most recent season.
And now, here is the host of Jeopardy, Alex Trebek.
Thank you, Johnny Gilbert. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome, everyone. Welcome, 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 as Jeopardy begins its 37th season of original quiz programming.
Our next guest interviewed Trebek for her book, which comes out tomorrow, called Answers in the Form of Questions, A Definitive History, An Insider's Guide to Jeopardy. Claire McNear, who covers sports and culture for The Ringers, and she's with us today. Claire, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, listeners, we want to hear from you. Give us a call if you've ever been or auditioned for Jeopardy, or do you have a favorite moment? A favorite Alex Trebek moment, or a favorite fact you learned from the show. Give us a call, 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. So can we start by talking about Alex, given the news? He's a chapter in your book, a whole chapter. What is it that you wanted to find out about Alex, or you wanted to know about him when you first went into this project?
I mean, so my book is partly a celebration of Jeopardy as a long-running TV institution, but also when I was working on it over the last 2 years, I was looking at Jeopardy at a time of change, and obviously a major change has now come to the show much sooner than I think any of us hoped it would. But it's, you know, Jeopardy has not changed much historically, and now, of course, after we see the end of the Trebek era, when the final new episode airs at the end of this year, we will see a new host for the first time in almost 4 decades. I think what I was really curious about is really why Jeopardy has endured as this kind of cultural institution. It brings in 10 million viewers a night, and for special tournaments, it's sometimes some of the highest rated television, the highest rated show on TV, period. And just sort of like looking at why a stodgy game show has lasted and made such a mark on American culture.
Trebek started as a news broadcaster for the CBC in Canada. He was fluent in French. And he wanted to come to the States to break into show business. And it wasn't the easiest transition. I mean, he was out of work for a year before getting the Jeopardy gig. How did he wind up as the host of Jeopardy?
Yeah, I mean, he was always very humble about it, and kind of credited his success and his path to Jeopardy to just a series of lucky breaks, beginning with the fact that he was bilingual, which led to a job at CBC that you know, eventually led to him moving to Los Angeles to host some game shows. With Jeopardy, he had first kind of come onto their radar when he guest hosted a couple episodes of Wheel of Fortune, which is Jeopardy's sister show, has the same crew, same executive producer. And so he was known to Merv Griffin, who is the creator of Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy. And when they decided in the 80s that they wanted to bring Jeopardy back in syndication, they thought about Trebek. And they found him to be very refreshing, very unusual. He had a big, thick mustache and a big, you know, fuzzy halo of hair. And he was kind of a novel figure. So they sort of took a chance with him.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. Give us a call if you've ever been on or auditioned for Jeopardy, or you have a favorite fact that you learned from the show, or you just want to share your favorite Alex Trebek moments. Give us a call, 646-435-7280, or you can tweet to us at @AllOfItWNYC. That's the same handle on Instagram if you want to send a message there. So he was not the first host of the show. How was he received after his predecessor, Art Fleming?
Yeah, I mean, Art Fleming hosted the original version of the show in the 60s and 70s. And by the time Trebek's Jeopardy came about in 1984, the show had functionally been off the air for about a decade. And there were still a lot of loyal Art Fleming fans. He was a very loved figure, much as Alex Trebek is today. And seeing somebody else slide into the show, I think, was really shocking for viewers. And he was a very different kind of host, too. I think Trebek cultivated this kind of scholarly, funny, self-deprecating character that he sort of played, that I think was pretty true to who he actually was. But Art Fleming was a different sort of host. He was a very gregarious, affable host and very humble. You know, he would joke about how he didn't know any of the material and he was lucky to have the answers in front of him. And Trebek, of course, was very different.
What did he see as his role on the show?
He was very, very particular about how he was introduced on the show. He insisted when he became the host that he be introduced on each episode as the host of the show, not the star of the show, even though on most game shows the host was and is introduced as a star, and certainly is when you are watching an episode. Like, you know, it's a Steve Harvey show. But with Jeopardy!, Trebek was always just so admiring of his contestants and really thought that, you know, knowing all this stuff really mattered and really was important. And I think he did whatever he could to put the spotlight back on them.
So, well, speaking of contestants, we have a couple who have called in. Let's go to line five. Jesse is calling in from Staten Island. And Jesse, you were on the show in 2014?
Yeah, my episode aired on June 25th, 2014.
So tell us how you were on the show. What was your experience?
You don't really get to meet Trebek until he shows up for the taping, because of all the you got to make sure there's no interaction between the contestant and Trebek himself. But when he's not on camera, he's really, really funny, and he plays to the audience amazingly.
And what was your experience in Jeopardy? How did you do?
We all missed Final Jeopardy. I came in third.
But you made it to the show.
Yeah.
Thanks.
The thing was that afterwards, during the after the credits interview, Trebek was revealed that he was the one who came up with the clue in the first place. So he stumped all three of us.
There you go. Jesse, thanks for calling in. Let's go to line 12. Hi, who's this?
Is that me?
That's you. Hi. Who is this?
Hi. I'm Maggie Quate.
Hey, Maggie. And so tell
I was
us.
On that...
Go for it.
Go ahead. I was going to say I was a competitor in the 2020 Teachers Tournament this past late May and early June.
So why did you want to be on Jeopardy?
I wanted to be on Jeopardy for so many reasons. You know, I'm a big old nerd. I teach middle school humanities at Beit Rabban Day School here in New York City. And Jeopardy! is this lifelong dream for so many people to get to be sort of in your milieu and getting to show off how exciting it is to share knowledge and to have intellectual curiosity.
Thank you so much for calling in. Our number 646-435-7280. We want to know from you Jeopardy! Fans, if you've ever been on Jeopardy! Or auditioned, if you have a favorite fact you learned or a favorite Alex Trebek moment. My guest is Claire McNear. Her new book is called Answers in the Form of Questions, A Definitive History and Insider's Guide to Jeopardy! So the book is, aside from Jeopardy! Itself, the book has great trivia in it about Jeopardy!, things like Jeopardy!'s typeface. What is a favorite Jeopardy! Fact, Claire, that you learned while researching the book?
Oh, man, that's really, it's tough to choose. I think that that Jesse just made a really good point, which is that I think when you compete on Jeopardy!, when somebody finds out that you've been on the show, it famously kind of the first question everybody gets asked is, well, what is Alex Trebek like? Mm-hmm. And he was right in that most contestants don't really get to interact with him much. And that is because of an actual federal law that dictates the integrity of quiz shows like Jeopardy! Based on the scandals that, you know, resulted in the movie quiz show that was about that. So Trebek, because he knows what material lies ahead in the games, like, he's kind of siloed from the contestants. And so for most contestants, they really only see what happens in the game, and they usually don't see him till the moment he walks out on the stage, just as he does on TV. So he is kind of this enigma for a lot of players.
So, yeah, let's talk about that federal law that is about game shows. What's the law exactly, and when was it enacted?
Yeah, so this dates back to the 1950 scandals, where a guy named Charles Van Dorn in 1956, he was a Columbia University professor, appeared on The Quiz Show 21, which was just an absolute sensation on television. And he went on a tear, and he won over $100,000, which was a huge deal at the time, and he became this kind of national sensation himself, and you know, was headline news night after night as his streak continued. And then it turned out that the show had kind of been working with him to manufacture that run. They'd been briefing him on the material, or they'd been telling his opponents to throw games. And in fact, this had been happening on a couple other shows. So that itself became this huge, huge scandal, and there were congressional hearings, and you know, they were convicted of perjury, and it was a really, really big deal. So in 1959, Congress got to work on amending the Communications Act to basically say that cheating on a quiz show is illegal. And it's enforced really strictly to this day on shows like Jeopardy, where they treat it like a state secret. Anybody who has any access to the material, they've got a lawyer sitting off on the side of the stage with the judges just to make sure there's never any kind of skullduggery, or not even the appearance that maybe one player might have an advantage.
Let's go to Jordan, who is calling in from the North Fork. Hi, Jordan. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So my biological father died when I was 4 years old in the year 1969. And one of the very few memories I have of him is sitting with him and my mom on the couch in Queens, watching him on Jeopardy. And I have no memory of his voice. And after talking to everyone in the family, the only known recording of him to exist is this Jeopardy episode. And I'm wondering if there's a way to research which episode he was on, and then is there an archive where I can actually view the episode and hear his voice for the first time in since 1969?
Do you have any information?
That's a wonderful story. Did he compete in the Trebek era, or was this the Art Fleming days?
It was either late 1968 or early 1969.
So it's a little bit trickier, because that was that earlier Art Fleming era. And the way that it used to work with studios is they would basically tape over a lot of episodes of television once they'd aired. They didn't feel the need to kind of keep a backlog. And the Trebek show, the studio that exists in Los Angeles, really is pretty separate. It was a pretty new creation when they rebooted the show, but you should absolutely try to reach out to them. They certainly have a library of all the Trebek episodes, so beginning in 1984, but they would at least be able to point you in the right direction.
Hey, Jordan, why don't you give our screener your information, and maybe we can help you. We can ask Claire offline who you should call and to maybe be able to help you out. That would be wonderful if that's possible. My guest is Claire McNear. The name of the book is Answers in the Form of Questions, A Definitive History and Insider's Guide to Jeopardy. We'll have more with Claire and more of you smarty pants people. We have a lot of people listening to the show who apparently were on Jeopardy. And we'll find out how one gets to be on Jeopardy after a quick break.
Support for WNYC comes from St. Francis Heart Center. Their approach to heart and healthcare is rooted in high science, and their culture is built upon human understanding. More at chscardiology.org. Adelphi University, now offering an accelerated MBA and graduate degrees in professional accounting and supply chain management. More at adelphi.edu/business degree. WNYC is a media partner of the International Human Rights Art Festival, presenting Celebration of International Human Rights Day, Gambian Griot, Congressman John Lewis video, Poet in Exile, and more, December 12th, 2 p.m. online, ihraf.org.
The United States has an answer at last. Joe Biden has enough Electoral College votes to become the next president. We reflect on the race and how Biden came to win, get reaction from people around the country, and ask what our leaders need to do now to end the coronavirus pandemic, which continues to spread nationwide. I'm Tanzina Vega, and that's next time on The Takeaway, weekday afternoons at 3 on 93.9 FM.
This is All of It. My guest is Claire McNear. The name of her book is Answers in the Form of Questions, A Definitive History and Insider's Guide to Jeopardy. So you interviewed so many former contestants for the book. Was there a common theme to the experience, Claire?
Well, I think it's really, I think as a viewer, you don't always have a sense of just how competitive it is, just how hard it is to get on Jeopardy, and just how long some of those contestants have been trying to get on the show. In the past year, more than 100,000 people have taken the online contestant test. The show auditions, usually in person, but right now on Zoom, about 2,500 of those people, and only about 400 of those make it onto an episode in a given season. So it's incredibly competitive, and you just have all these stories of people who have tried year after year after year after year, and you know many of them are brilliant. James Holzhauer tried to get on the show for many years before he was finally accepted on, and then of course went on that crazy run. But it really is this feat, and I was so interested in how people prepare. I think over the last 5 years, there has been kind of a revolution amongst Jeopardy contestants. It used to be that maybe you picked up an almanac, maybe you made flashcards of the vice presidents, and you were good to go. That was how you studied for Jeopardy in like the months between getting the call and going out there to tape. Contestants now build their own buzzers. They build their own simulators of the game. They, you know, practice to shave off hundreds of thousands of seconds from their buzzer reaction time. They use really pretty advanced statistics to figure out exactly where the daily double is, exactly how much to bet in Final Jeopardy. It really is this kind of like Moneyball moment for Jeopardy. So I was really interested in capturing that and was able to talk to a lot of contestants who are in the midst of that.
Let's go to line 12 is Fran. Fran, you say you were part of, quote, one of the weirdest episodes of all time.
Hi, Allison. Hi, Claire. Yes, I was. The show aired 3 years ago, and I think I got mentioned in the book from what I was told. Basically what happened was I was just gobsmacked. I was leading. I had about 12,000 and change, and the guy next to me was the second place was at 4,000, and the defending champ was at 1,000. He couldn't get any traction. And with four clues left in the game, Harry Friedman, the producer, then said, stop. And that's what happens when you ever hear Trebek would say there's a scoring change. Well, that's what's happened. They've stopped the game. The producers and the clue crew confer among themselves because maybe they think there was an answer that was that they gave, basically an answer that was wrong that turned out to be right or what have you. The upshot was they gave him back a $2,000 clue, the second place guy. And wouldn't you know, the next clue, he hits a daily double. It's an easy one. And all of a sudden, I went from runaway to being tied. And I'm like, please, God, please, God, please, God, don't give me a final that I'm going to screw up, you know? And they gave me Asian geography. And it's like, I had no business betting that. And if I had a sense of humor about it at the time, I would have said, well, what's a country that's never been in my kitchen? But, I had wanted to be a five-time champ since I was a kid, and it was all crumbling apart. And, you know, the answer was Iran, which I don't associate. You know, I think they were banking on most of us not associating the Middle East with Iran. I mean, it was Asia. And basically, Carlos and I bet the house. and we ended up with zero. And Manny, the defending champ who only had 1,000, bet all but a dollar, and he won with a dollar.
Wow, what a story.
You know what, I did write about that game in the book, because it is this fascinating, bizarre outcome where, in fact, you and Carlos finished with more money with the consolation prizes of $2,000 and $1,000 as opposed to the champion who just had a dollar.
Thanks.
That's true. Well, Manny lasted one more game after me. But, I mean, I was just gobsmacked. It's amazing what happens. I mean, I didn't want to tell anybody what happened because the way it shook out was just so traumatic. But sure enough, two months later, I had to tell people because they would have killed me had I not mentioned it. And the actual fringe benefit of Jeopardy, is one thing is my circle of friends just blew up. Like, my friends and family didn't hold it against me that I lost. It's like, I mean, I'm much harder on myself than other people are. And my circle of friends exploded. There's a whole fraternity, sorority, what have you, of Jeopardy contestants on Facebook private groups. And I was invited into a bunch of groups after that. And some of these people have gotten to be friends in real life.
Wonderful byproduct. Thanks for calling in. Let's go to Katie on line 4, who is also on Jeopardy. Hi, Katie. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, hey. Thanks for having me. I love your show.
Thanks a bunch. I appreciate that.
One of the few things keeping me going in the quarantine.
Well, I appreciate that from somebody smart enough to make it on Jeopardy. Thanks a lot. What was your experience like?
So I was on in 2004. It was right after Ken Jennings lost. I actually got to be in the studio to see him lose, which was, kind of fun.
Wow.
But, I was going to echo your previous caller just to say that, or one of the prior callers to say, everybody, would always ask me, oh, how was Alex? You know, was he nice? And it's like, well, he wasn't allowed to talk to us, but he was really funny with the audience. And he couldn't talk to any of the contestants, even when we were in the audience prior to our taping. He could only talk to like non-contestant audience members. But it was a fun experience. And of course, you're not allowed to tell anybody what happened for as long as it takes for them to air your episode.
Was that hard?
It was really hard because I was coming back from the airport and it had leaked that Ken Jennings had lost. So, of course, everybody was after me to say, did you beat him? Did you beat him? And I'm like, I can't tell you. I'm waiting for them to send my check.
is it gauche to ask? Can I ask how much did you win?
So I was on the episode after he lost. I think I was on for 3 games and I think I won like 32,000. I think there was like a $1 at the end of it because of some weird wager that I made. But that was back before people were super scientific about the wagering and, all of that kind of thing.
Well,
so you defeated Nancy Zerg then.
I did.
Toppled,
yeah.
Ken Jennings famously. That's incredible.
Yeah. It was really funny because normally the way the day breaks up, they have a couple of episodes and then they go to lunch, they do 3 episodes and they would go to lunch and then another 2. But because they had all of this, kind of stuff to do after Ken lost, we wound up going to lunch before we competed against each other. So they had to put us at separate tables.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And then after, after the last game of the day where, I had wound up losing, the 3 of us who competed were staying at the same hotel, and we went to the bar at the hotel and watched that night's game in the bar.
I love this story so much. Thank you so much for calling in. And I love, Claire, that you knew exactly what the next episode was. This is you are a dedicated researcher.
Big moment in Jeopardy history.
My guest is Claire McNear. The name of her book is Answers in the Form of Questions, A Definitive History and Insider's Guide to Jeopardy. Now, we touched on that in that last answer, that the schedule for the show is really rigorous. It tapes 5 episodes a day, 2 days a week, 23 weeks a year from July to April. What is the thought process behind having that rigorous a schedule? And how long does each game last in real time?
Yeah, what is amazing about to watch Jeopardy in the studio is it is just such a well-oiled machine. They are so good at what they do. And in large part, of course, that's the mastery of Alex Trebek, and is another thing that is so bittersweet to think about. But they taped the episodes in scarcely more than the time they actually taped it to air. And in fact, because they're on commercial breaks, usually it's just about 22 minutes of a single game. It's lightning fast. And I think they are able to tape a whole week's worth of episodes, five games in a row, in a single day, just because they're so good at it. And I also think that for contestants, I think that, you know, those are long days if you're in multiple games, but I think also, you know, you can get on a hot streak.
I want to ask you about the buzzer. The buzzer seems to be so important, if I won't say more important than knowing the answer, but the buzzer is not as easy as one thinks. The contestants have to be trained in the buzzer, correct?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, that absolutely has become a part of the modern game of Jeopardy, where people really do train for the buzzer, you know, either in those few weeks before they go on the show, or some even longer. There are a lot of hopeful future Jeopardy contestants who watch the game every night with a ballpoint pen in their hand, and they click the clicker every single time they you know, ring in to say their own answer. In the actual Jeopardy studio, all contestants get a very brief morning session at the contestant lecterns and with the buzzers, not for any money, not for a full game, but just to kind of get the hang of it. The way it works is actually very complicated. So normally it will be Alex Trebek. He will read the clue, and there is a person sitting at the judges' table who's one of the researchers, and he physically flips a switch the moment Trebek finishes reading the clue, and that activates the buzzer. And so for the players, if they ring in even a moment before he does that, they're locked out of the system for a whole quarter second, which is a really long time on Jeopardy. Your opponents will probably get in ahead of you. So it's just sort of disastrous. So, you know, finding a way to get that timing exactly right is just such a huge piece of Jeopardy gameplay. And you don't really know if you have it. You can practice all you want. And, you know, if you find in the morning practice session that you're just a little too slow, there's not very much you can do about it, because you can know all the answers to the entire board. And you know, if you can't ring in first, you don't get to say them.
Let's go to line six. Sherry is calling from Brooklyn with a funny story about Alex Trebek. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. It's been, you know, such a big past day of former Jeopardy contestants sharing their stories about Alex. And he was really important for me growing up in my life, watching the show and then finally getting to be on the show. My episode aired in January 2017, and I was so confident going in. I had this big ego. I was going to win, and I lost, like, big time. And I was so in shock. You know, at the end of the show, Alex talks with all the contestants after, and he looked at me, and I think he could see, like, how just out of it I was. And he said, you know, expletive happens. And I was just kind of shocked because I did not expect Alex Trebek to curse. And it turns out, I think in his latest memoir, like, he mentions that he is a big cursor. But it just kind of was like, oh, this is okay. Like, this did happen. And the words kind of sat with me for the next couple months as I processed the loss, being on the show overall, getting to meet him. And it's just such a simple and, like, effective message to come back to at times when things just don't quite go your way.
Thank you so much for calling in. Claire McNair is the author of Answers in the Form of Questions, A Definitive History and Insider's Guide to Jeopardy. And Claire, I think you have an event with the 92nd Street White coming up. You want to give it a plug?
Yes, absolutely. On a Thursday night, 6 p.m. Eastern, we're doing a digital event, the 92nd Street Y, but of course online you can access it from anywhere. And I'm bringing in three champions from recent Jeopardy history. That's Pam Mueller, Buzzy Cohen, and Austin Rogers. And we're just going to talk about Jeopardy strategies. Of course, Alex Trebek and his legacy and their memories of him, and talk a little bit about my book. And I think it'll be, you know, a really great time. And I think a special chance to remember Trebek.
The name of the book is Answers in the Form of Questions. Claire McNair, thank you so much for being with us.